Welcome to, this is our second conference call for RP 101, Plan for Success. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting it from the traditional territory of the Kwinana First Nation and Intan Kwachin Council. Last week, what we did is we looked at planning from what we call an outcomes-based perspective. For those of you who've jumped in and joined last week's required learning activity, you'll see that it actually didn't take you too long. I wasn't looking for right or wrong answers. I was just looking for you to try it. Thank you for doing that. What an outcomes-based perspective means is that what we are planning for is we're planning for the bigger things that we want to achieve. You identified some of those on last week's call. Things like a sense of belonging in your community, improved physical and mental health, physical literacy, a welcoming community, and health-enhancing rather than at-risk behavior, community identity. Those are really big outcomes. All the things that you do in your work should hopefully contribute to those bigger outcomes. This week, what we're going to do is we're going to look at a couple of different ways that we can frame our plans. Your plan might vary depending on who you are, the role you're in, the organization or community you work for. Keep in mind that this is personal. We'll discuss and share some examples, but you use what works best for you in your situation. On today's call, we're going to start off with some quick introductions, and I'm going to pop the question already in the chat. For those of you who prefer to respond just in the chat, you can go ahead and do so. I'll also go around our circle too. After the introductions, we'll look at some processes and frameworks using the slides, and then we're going to do a bit more in-depth discussion around planning. In about 10 seconds or less, or in the chat, your choice, I'd like to invite you to introduce yourself and share one thing in a planning process that you believe is important to do and why. I'm going to start at the top of my circle just because it's a little easier for me to see, but I won't always put Robin on the spot just this time. Robin, I'll give an example first while you think of yours. Then we'll go to Adam, Myla, Holly, Josh, Caden, Melanie, Amy, and Breton. If anyone else joins, they can jump in the end of the circle. For me, hopefully I won't take what you're going to say, Robin. For me, I believe it's always important to put my plans on paper, no matter how big or small they are, because sometimes I come up with these plans in my head, but if they're in my head, they might be hard to remember, my brain might change them, or it's also more difficult to explain to others. For me, plan on paper is really important. How about yourself, Robin?
I think it's really important to plan like debriefing afterwards because sometimes you don't remember the next time the event comes around, the little things that you didn't really think of beforehand, or like what went well and what could be improved on, and it's a lot harder to recall later down the line.
That's great. That's a good example of how we use our plan in that programming cycle where we have a bigger plan, it gets into smaller plans, we deliver and implement, and then we look at what worked and didn't, and it cycles back into our plan again. Thank you. Adam, how about yourself? You guys go ahead and introduce where you're calling in from if you think that people don't know, or just jump right in, I think.
Sure. Adam calling in from Yellowknife. I suppose once I've developed a plan, I always like to run it by someone who's maybe planned for a similar event before and just get their perspective on it to see if my plans look reasonable, if I'm missing anything major, just take advantage of the knowledge of others around me.
That's great. Thanks, Adam. Casey, I noticed I had your name before Adam's, but when you joined with a phone, it bumped you at the bottom. Let's come back and go to Acacia and then Myla and then Holly.
The question's about event. It kind of cut out before. What was the question again?
Yeah, just maybe introduce yourself, where you're calling in from, and what's one thing in a planning process that you believe is important to do and why?
I'm working at Elder Active as the program coordinator. I also teach as the art instructor. In terms of planning, one of the most important things is to sort of anticipate problems as much as you can. Like, if you're like, oh, well, what if there isn't enough space for the amount of people that you have, or what if there is not enough people coming to a specific event, how are you going to adjust the event? Like, it depends on the event or program. I mean, for us, like, our programs are usually repeats of the same thing or slight variations of the same thing. So event planning might be look a little different than our programming. I don't do as much event planning, but more like ongoing programs, and that might be like something you learn as you go a little bit. You're like, okay, last time this didn't go as well, so this time we're going to need to prepare it in this way, right? Like, I learn as I go with the art program, which is new. I'm like, okay, I learned that originally I had 10 people because I had 10 chairs in a space, but I realized it's too tight in the space with 10 people, so I reduced the amount of people to register is only 9. So, like, things that you kind of pick up as you go is just paying attention to those details and fine-tuning your programming or event as you go along, I think, is important in the planning process.
Thanks, Acacia. For the rest of you, I'd encourage you to think a little bit bigger than planning for your programs. So planning for the programs or events was what we covered in PE 101. In this learning activity, we're looking at the bigger picture. So planning for at least a year's worth of programming, planning for a strategic plan, planning for something that encompasses the programming that you might do, as well as other things that you do. So let's try and move our mind. Like, you know, the planning for programs is very, very important, and I know you all do that in your day-to-day work. But let's imagine that you're heading up altitude-wise in the sky, and you're in that big 747, like Igor, it must be somewhere over the Pacific Ocean. So really big picture planning. So let's think of it that way. So if I go to Myla next, Myla, did you want to jump in and share something that you think is important about big picture planning and why?
Sure. So my name is Myla. I am from CarMax. I work on the traditional pay of the lowest standing people. Those are all really great examples of things that you should do when you're planning. I think defining a budget is pretty important, and like, the sooner you can do it for each activity. We were just dealing with a bunch of that yesterday during a meeting. Figure out what kind of grants and funding and due dates and all that fun stuff.
So being able to operationalize or implement your plan, because if we're talking about planning, sometimes we have these big plans, but then a budget is one of the ways that we're going to carry out our plan. So that definitely is an important aspect of planning. Thanks. Whether you're doing big picture planning or program planning. Holly, how about yourself? Did you want to jump in and share one thing in a big picture, like annual planning or strategic planning, that's important?
So I'm still fairly new, so doing the RLI 6 was my first annual plan. So we made it. So,
That's okay. You can jump back. Do you want me to come back around to you?
Yeah, please.
Okay, I'll do that. Josh, do you want to jump in? I noticed Caden pops in the chat, but do you want to jump in and share what you think as far as big picture planning, what's important to do?
Something I think is important for big picture planning is probably looking at the budget and deciding whether you have the finances to fulfill whatever program you have for the duration that you set out to do it for and cover all the costs that you need.
Yeah, so definitely that budget piece is hard, because sometimes when we do strategic planning, we plan for what we sort of think is important in the community, but we don't always have the budget to match that. So sometimes it's very important to either consider our budget before we do that big planning and know what we think we'll have coming in, and plan according for the budget, or the other way around. So thanks. And Caden, you've talked about breaking things down into from big tasks to smaller things. And I think that is something that we do with a strategic plan, for example, that might be 5 or 10 years, as in the case of the one that's in Nunavut. It would be accompanied by what's called an implementation plan, which is what you're talking about. So how do you take those big goals, like we want to maintain our facilities? That's a big goal, right? How do you break it down into smaller things? Well, we have to check the playgrounds once a year, and we have to do that. So there's definitely a operationalizing or implementing part to planning. So thank you. Melanie, I see you popped in the chat, and you mentioned about the same sort of thing and also budgets. Let's see who's next. Amy, did you want to jump in? What do you think is important to do in a big picture planning process?
Sure. So at in New River here, what our recs department has decided was we kind of created a Excel sheet with just kind of every idea and program we want to pursue throughout the year, so then we can see it more as one large picture and have more of a timeline of like, okay, we want to do a softball clinic in May, so we need to have advertising and everything prepared for by like early April, and then that way it's just more of a timeline, and it makes it a lot easier to just know what's coming up and what needs to be done rather than having it all be just one giant rush of a mess in the like 5 days before.
Yeah, and that's similar to what Caden was mentioning. So again, that's kind of more of your implementation. The thing that you can do when you brainstorm a whole bunch of ideas about what you want to do, you can then group them into categories and see how they fit as goals. So then that might show you your bigger thing, like what are you trying to accomplish overall that's bigger than those individual programs. So by delivering a series of special events, what is the bigger thing that you're trying to accomplish? So, or why is it important to do these series of special events? So I really encourage all of you on the call, try and step out of your programmer role, because I think that's where a lot of you are, and think about why are we doing these things? What's the bigger reason for it? And so Amy, your brainstorming idea would help you figure out what the why is. So you can do it both ways around. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, in our thing, we've discovered that we have, like, a community section, a youth section, sports, fitness, and it just breaks it down into more specific, like, what we want to offer the community and why.
Yeah, so Robin and I were talking at the beginning of the call about how you could do that as, like, an annual plan, right? So annual plan, and you could break it out by your target groups or by your types of activities or things like that. Thanks for that. Breton, how about yourself? Welcome back. I'm assuming you're back in Iqaluit, or maybe not, but did you want to jump in and introduce yourself and share one thing that's important in a big picture planning process? And after Breton, we'll go to Misha and then April. Hi.
Hello, yes, I'm back now. Thank you. So, my name is Breton. I am recreation manager for the city of Iqaluit. So, for us in our planning process, I think a big one, just because we have so many staffing issues and staff turnover, is having a backup plan. So, we've run into situations, you know, where one individual has been running a program for us for, you know, multiple months in a row, and then if they end up leaving our department, where do we go from there? Who can we get in to fill in for that programming? Or, say, for special events, for example, we have somebody who's specifically in charge of running our special events, but if they're sick or they can't make it on the day of, what are we going to do as a backup plan?
Great, thanks. So backup planning is important. And I think, too, like, again, a lot of what you guys are talking about is sort of the on-the-ground planning and seeing how your plan pans out and stuff. And, again, let's think about the bigger picture. So, Breton, if you take that at a higher level, you might have a staffing plan. Like, when do we need staff? How many fill-in ones do we need? That sort of thing. And that might be part of a bigger picture plan even. Before I go to Misha, I'll pop in. Actually, Misha's popped in the chat too. So Holly's recreation in Fort Liard, and I see you posted your annual plan. Thanks, Holly. I haven't looked at it yet, but I will. And I think an annual plan is a great way to sort of guide your activities and make sure you're reaching those bigger goals for what you want to accomplish in your community. And Misha, you said that you feel kind of like Holly or Amy, right?
Yeah, actually, but I just thought of another one. Maybe like engaging others or bringing people in into the planning process is super important.
Yeah, exactly. So you guys might have seen Robin's post in my reply to Robin. So we were talking a little bit more about a strategic plan for Marsh Lake. And really, if you're going to do a 5-year strategic plan, you want to really invite input from people in your community. That's really important. So thank you. And April's popped in the chat. April's from, hopefully I say it right, Uluwatuk. Hopefully that's right, April. And again, budgeting and making sure that you have things. So keep in mind that we have that model for planning where there's different levels of planning. So let's think of planning maybe as layers. The layer that most of you guys are doing or the part that everybody sees. Go ahead, April.
I also thought of finding qualified people and like from out of town, if they need to come, then you need to plan months ahead and, you know, book their travel accommodations and have somebody, if there's nobody qualified in the community to teach a certain thing, then you'd have to find somebody from out of town. There's that. And for like special events, make sure your budget is approved by higher authority.
That's right. So I think what you're also mentioning, and this is something for all of you to consider as well, is that, I think that one thing to consider when you're planning is your capacity. And that's a little bit bigger word than what April, you're talking about people and budget, but that's all part of capacity. So if you create this big elaborate plan, like if you guys, Robin and Marsh Lake, create this big strategic plan, but there's no way you have the staff for it, the money to do it, the space to do it, any of those things, no point in doing that type of plan. So a plan also needs to match a little bit with what you have available to you to carry it out. So keep that in mind too. So great, let's jump in a little bit more into planning. I'm just going to share my screen because it might help talk through a couple of these things. Let's see, we'll go right here, present. Okay, so this slide right here that's popping up, this is where I just want to remind you that in this learning event, RP 101, we're looking at this planning all of what we're doing, or even bigger than what you do. So try and keep in mind that we're planning this big picture, high-level stuff, whereas when we were in PE 101 in January, you were planning your individual programs and events and things like that. And you can see how this fits into that, you know, let's take our big plans, get the details, how we're going to implement it, deliver it, and then evaluate what worked and what didn't. So try and keep that in mind, and that will help you with the RLA this week, because this week's RLA is a little bit trickier than the one from last week. So what we want to do then is you want to sort of choose, let's see if I can get the slide to change. There we go. Regardless of how simple or complicated your plan is, make sure that your plan, even if it's a big one, should show a little bit about what you want to accomplish and why and how you're going to get there. Keep in mind that planning is a process, and try and think of the different parts of the process. The part of the process of presenting or displaying or creating your plan also is about choosing a framework, and there's a couple here on this slide, that works for the type of plan you're going to do. So if you're going to do a strategic plan, you might want to look at the one that's on the right-hand side here from Santa Kilowatt. If you're going to do something for a big project that you're going to do, you could look at this logic model or outcomes framework plan. And although words are important, a visual framework can really help you sort of explain what your plan's about. So there's some other ways of showing it here. Some people use circles, some people use lines. It's really up to you what you want to make it look like. So working in community recreation, I believe that it's actually really important that we explore also Indigenous planning frameworks. All of us, I believe, work with communities that are Indigenous or communities where Indigenous people come to our programs and things like that. So it's important to understand sort of a different way to maybe the way you were raised if you're not Indigenous. So this framework here uses Indigenous ways to achieve outcomes, like big picture outcomes, that are defined by Indigenous people and communities. And some of the key things that make Indigenous planning different from mainstream or Western planning approaches are the way that Indigenous planning recognizes and incorporates traditional knowledge, cultural identity, customary law, and also Indigenous worldview. So again, whether or not you're Indigenous or work with an Indigenous community, sometimes a holistic approach to planning, which is what I find, which is what appeals to me in this model, works better for developing community and building community. So I'm going to just pause for a moment, and I have a big question for you here. I won't put Robin on the spot first, so let me jump into the middle here. So maybe I'm going to, let's just go down here. Adam, I'll put you on the spot. I know you can handle my big questions. So let me post the question first. And I invite you to take about 30 seconds, maybe not much longer. We just want to make sure that we have enough time for everyone to answer. And if you don't feel that you have words on the tip of your tongue to answer this question, please feel free to listen to what everyone else is saying or pass and reflect on it at a later time. But what I'd like you to think about right now is, how does the way we're raised or brought up, how does our culture, and how does our view on the world influence how we plan? And Adam, while you're thinking of it, we're going to go from Adam to Acacia to Myla, Polly, and that way. Adam, while you're thinking, I'll just share an example to give you a moment to think of your answer so I don't put you on the spot too abruptly.
Okay.
So a few years ago, I worked really closely with the Council of Yukon First Nations, and I facilitated a Yukon First Nations wellness plan. This was a big picture plan for wellness for First Nations across the territory. And one thing that I learned very clearly while I was doing that is that any information that I gathered for that plan, it wasn't my information. That information belonged to the community, and it was their knowledge, it was their understanding, and I was simply there to help them mold and shape that information into a way that made sense in a plan. And as a non-Indigenous person, it took me a while to shift my thinking to seeing the community as experts, not as me as the expert. And so it's been important for me to learn and to honor and respect that. And I think for me that applies to both Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities. I try and see the community as an expert, as the expert now, not myself. So hopefully I didn't take the words out of anybody's mouth, but Adam, do you want to take a shot at answering that question?
Yeah, sure. I think, being raised myself, like I grew up in Kingston, Ontario, in a very sort of Western context. And I think the basic epistemological worldview is one of compartmentalization, where my thinking, my learning, my education was very much like the architecture of a university campus, where there's a biology building over here and a microbiology building there and a cellular biology building there and a medical building there. And they're all segmented. And after moving north, I sort of learned to adapt that into a much more integrated and a holistic approach, which I think reflects a lot more the Indigenous worldview as I've come to understand it, where we don't compartmentalize portions of knowledge so much, but we think more about the relationships between them and the interaction between different areas of knowledge. And so with planning, I think, by adopting a more integrated approach, you open yourself up to a lot more inputs from different sources that maybe you otherwise wouldn't consider if you're taking a much more narrow, compartmentalized view.
Yeah, and I think that explanation also speaks to the benefits of recreation and how we know that whether we're delivering special events or a youth program or a senior program, that ultimately it's the relationships that people create in those programs, it's the health-enhancing behaviors, and it contributes to a healthier community overall. So perhaps that's another way of looking at it from a recreation perspective. Thanks, Adam. Myla, do you feel like taking a shot at this question? Oh, sorry, I was going to go to Acacia first and then Myla.
I'm sorry, just a meeting. I was writing a little bit of things. So I think with the approach to planning, the things that came to mind for me were, I think that we are most adept, like people are most adept at planning for things that relate to people that are similar from them in some way, right? Like if they're from a similar community, age bracket, gender, economic background, those are things that definitely play an unconscious role in how we plan for our activities and how we run our organization, right? So I think unconscious assumptions that can affect things too is like, oh, we might assume, like if you come from a wealthier or more middle class background, you might assume, oh yeah, $40 for a program isn't much. But to another person, it might be a lot, right? So it's keeping those things in mind while you're planning and trying to keep things accessible, because you have to keep in mind that your resources, your abilities might not be the same as your target audience. And the other thing is I think that growing up here in the Yukon, I can relate and understand a northern perspective, but I also still might struggle to understand someone from a different age bracket, a different generation, or say an indigenous worldview. I might not have that given my own background. It's going to affect how I see things, right? And it's important to keep that in mind while planning.
That's great, thank you. It is, like, it's important to think about what we bring to it and how our eyes see things as compared to someone else. So thank you for sharing that. You really explained that very nicely. Appreciate it. Let's go to Myla, and then Holly, and then Josh and Caden. And again, feel free to pass if you want to pass, if nothing comes to mind at the moment. This is a big question to put you on the spot to ask. So, Myla, any thoughts?
I believe any type of personal experiences that everybody has are pretty different and can shape your views on goals, the practices that you do, learning behaviors, relationship roles, and possible interests.
Yeah, thank you. And Holly, any thoughts for you on how our upbringing, culture, or the way we see the world might influence how we plan?
I'd like to pass, but I really like what Acacia was saying about economic background and how what might fit for one person doesn't work for everybody, and you gotta keep that in mind.
That's so true. And if we can remove some of those barriers and just assume that maybe nobody can afford to pay them and find ways to make things less expensive for people, then we get more people involved too. So that would come into the planning as well. Thank you. Let's go to Josh, then Caden, and Melanie. Josh, what are your thoughts about this? How does our upbringing, culture, and or worldview influence how we might approach planning?
I think it's been mentioned before in a couple of different ways, but it's just your upbringing, your culture influences the way you see the world, and that can bring a lot of positive different perspectives, but can also lead to you having certain biases when you don't have certain experiences because of your particular upbringing. So I think it's always important if you're going into a different community that you may not be super knowledgeable about, but you know what cultural practices are important to them, that you're always trying your best to stay up to date and educated, so trying to mitigate any bias before you go in and try to help the community.
Yeah, and especially for you guys that working with a lot of different communities, right? So trying to do an annual plan, perhaps for your own program, that reaches sort of a number of different Indigenous communities and Northern communities across Manitoba, because even our provinces and territories, there's so much diversity from one community to the next. So it's hard to do that bigger picture plan sometimes that works for everybody, right? So thanks for sharing that. Dean, any thoughts from you on that question?
Other than what everybody has already mentioned, a simple example for me, being a very urbanized person, growing up in Winnipeg in the big city, kind of having all resources here, being a member of Red River Métis Nation, but identifying kind of with my heritage later in life, so I'm trying to reconnect culturally now and exploring a lot to reclaim and learn, and being, we say, white passing, I walk both worlds, as we say, so I was able, I can blend in kind of whenever I want, so a little bit of a privilege check I like to do once in a while when I'm reflecting, but the point I was going to make relating to that is the big city, we have access to everything here, kind of at our fingertips. And even when I think of our job with sports and recreation, I am much more of a sports person. And having access to multiple levels of sports and organized sports and competitive sports or grassroots, so whatever I choose. And that, as I was learning through my visits and communicating, consulting with communities, it's very different everywhere of their perspective of what is mainstream sport, what is traditional sport, what is recreation, and how does it relate. So that's something I'm very very interested in, fascinating, and when I have conversations.
That's great, thanks. And I wonder, too, for you guys at the Manitoba Aboriginal Sport and Recreation Council, if having diversity of staff, so staff with diverse backgrounds, and then if you come together as a staff to do your annual planning, if that also supports bringing different perspectives, different cultures, different worldviews into what you plan. So, I mean, you're probably fortunate you have a lot larger staff than what some of the other people might have. Thank you. Okay, let's go to Melanie, Amy, Bretton, Misha, and April. So, Melanie, any thoughts about how upbringing, culture, and worldview influences how we plan?
Yeah, I think there is a difference because I'm originally from Germany, so I only came to Canada later in life. And when you have immigration now in Germany, it is not a traditional immigrant country like it is like Canada or the US or Australia. So for me, it was one of the reasons why I wanted to live in Canada, to experience more and more multicultural society, because I think it has a lot of benefits. But what I learned, for example, now working in the Yukon, that that it will be more, how am I saying this, more sensitive towards different cultures, and there's a lot of new things that that I have to think about now to acknowledge that we're on First Nation territory and to voice that. I find it all very interesting, and but it's to have to make myself constantly these reminders, which I did not grow up with, to be more sensitive towards a multicultural society, and I think it has a lot of benefits, but it could also create, to be careful that you do not create maybe unwanted tensions by maybe forgetting these things. I'm not quite sure if I impress myself,
yeah.
Express myself, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks. And it is interesting to hear a perspective of somebody who hasn't grown up here. So thank you for sharing that. Amy, any thoughts from yourself around this question? Hopefully, I think you can see it, right?
Yeah. So like a lot of people have really said, I feel like a big majority of it, but like growing up in the Northwest Territories and in Hay River, like it's very isolated, so you very well have to know your resources and what you can offer. And with the upbringing, right, like right now we're trying to work on making projects, so I'm hiring like a lot of local artists, and some of those people are doing traditional Indigenous arts, and some of them
are not doing it, but in that case, it's going into the inclusivity where, you know, it's open to a variety of different skill levels, and that can really get formed into any of our programming of just trying to be inclusive and recognizing and considering, like, the resources that we have locally. And by growing up here, like, that's really influenced the way I look into planning all of this and how it's in, how recreation has influenced my life growing up. I'd really love it to influence the future generations and be more to those who that I was lacking for when I was growing up, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah, because I think recreation is a safe place where we can bring in and introduce people to different cultural activities, things like that. Like, there's been lots of reports on CBC North about the Denny Games at the Arctic Winter Games recently, and, you know, it's really great to see that, and so thank you for sharing that. Okay, I'm just going to go to Breton, Misha, April, and then Robin. And maybe we'll just, I'm just looking at the time, so maybe in about 30 seconds. And if somebody's already said it, you can just say that, you know, it's already been said. That's okay. So, Breton, any thoughts on how our upbringing, culture, or worldview influences our approach to planning?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess just for me, living basically my entire life in Nova Scotia and then moving to Iqaluit in June, it's definitely a change of pace up here, different interests culturally and kind of what typically goes on in the community. So for us, a lot more like community outreach in terms of what we're actually planning to make sure that the community is actually interested in what we're going to be planning, and also just trying to be a little bit more prepared, I guess, in advance, just being so isolated, maybe if it's supplies, materials, stuff like that, typically we have to order from down south, and it's a little bit more difficult to last minute go out to a store here and pick up some things, so yeah, hope that makes sense.
It does, thank you. Misha, any thoughts?
I'll try to be quick. So I grew up in a household that my mom was super against wild meat. Like, we'd never have anything like but anything from the grocery store. And moving to the Yukon and learning about food systems here and building a sustainable and food sovereign system includes wild meat. So it's like totally changed my perspective on like what healthy and nutritional food is versus like what I had when I was in Alberta.
That's great. Thank you. And April, I see you've posted. I really appreciate what you've talked online. For those of you who can't see it, April's talking about always planning to include culture, and also being sort of including, making sure that there's always elders there to mentor. It seems like also you place a priority on activities being outdoors and on the land so that you can pass down traditions and cultural ways of doing things. Does that sound about right, April? Did I summarize that?
Yes. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you. And Robin, you were first last time, but then we come back around. Any thoughts from you about how our upbringing or worldview or culture influences how we plan?
For sure. One thing that I always, that like is kind of in the back of my mind is about like shame, and especially around like accommodations and accessibility. If you're talking about like a sliding scale for like payment for a program, for example, there's always like oftentimes you overlook the shame that someone might experience by having to ask for those accommodations. And then just planning like ahead of how you can just have it in an accessible way. Because if one person needs it, often other people will need it, but they're just too ashamed to ask. Or if it's brought up in kind of a way where they have to ask instead of having it available, then it can be a big unspoken barrier for people.
Yeah, so to try and think of those barriers in advance that might come along with people where they're at in their lives, and try to make them feel like they can still be included and not ashamed that they can't afford to pay or they can't get the equipment or things like that. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. That it's really good to think about that, you know, coming back around. Think about where you come from, the way that you see the world, the way that the people who you're trying to provide services for see the world, and try and really flip it around and see through their eyes a little bit, too. I think that that's important. I'm just going to take a couple more minutes to share some of the content so that you're well prepared for this week's required learning activity. So we'll go back to this presentation here. And we talked about Indigenous planning. Slide 23 shows a framework that you might choose to use for a strategic plan. And a strategic plan, usually you begin with a vision for the future, like 5, 10, 15 years out, might be hopes and dreams. And then you start to work towards, well, how are we going to get there? So if the end of the trail are those mountains over there, how do I end it? Maybe there's not even a trail. How do I get there? So I think of, I don't know if anyone's seen a picture of Ulahoftok where April lives, but it's beautiful. But there's no trees or anything, and I've seen it only in winter. And so I imagine that you have to have these landmarks. You have to kind of know where you're going, and then you have to figure out the steps that will get, help you get there. And that's what I think of with strategic planning a little bit. So if you're choosing to do a strategic plan, you can change some of the terminology. I've got it listed here that goals are the broad strategies, and sometimes people say goals should be SMART, which is specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. I don't always write them that way. Some people say objectives are the more specific actions to help you achieve your goals, so you might have 3 or 4 objectives for each goal. But I've also seen it lately where that language is flipped around. Objectives are higher level than goals. Or I also seen language like priorities, strategies, or actions. So if you're working, if you choose to do a strategic plan for your required learning activity this week, consider that it needs to be broad and consider a cover a longer period of time. A minimum of 3 years and probably more like 5. And the Nunavut Aluzat, which is Nunavut Sport Physical Activity and Recreation Framework, is actually a 10-year strategic plan. So you can have a look at how that's laid out and designed. And that one is very much situated in IQ, which is a long Inuit word, but it means it's sort of Indigenous way or Inuit ways of knowledge and being. So it reflects Inuit societal values. But I encourage you to take a look at that one if you're looking at a strategic, if you want to create a strategic plan. On slide 26, there's some links to a couple of plans if you want to see some examples. Slide 24 here gives you a different type of framework. You might have heard of things like logic models, this or outcome-based planning. And if you start with something that, in a logic model, you usually start with something in mind like a big project. So I have a 2-year project that I'm going to be working on to do a Yukon Healthy Living Study. I would probably use this format for that specific project. It's not as broad as a strategic plan. It's not as broad as all the different things I do over a year. It's more specific to a project. So for those of you, if you have a big project that you're working on or creating something new, this might work because you can start with what you want to do and why. And then asking yourself the why gives you the outcomes that we talked about last week, which are the short or long-term changes that you expect to see. And outcomes, remember, are changes in knowledge, awareness, behavior, skills, and bigger ones like connected community too. And with this logic model or outcome-based planning, once you know where you're going and why, then you can do what some of you mentioned is figuring out how to get there. So a number of you mentioned things like budget, breaking down your activities, having timelines. So in this model, that's where you would see those things. You would have inputs, staff, money, space would be inputs, equipment, materials. And these inputs make it possible to carry out activities. The things that you're going to do, like promoting your program, registering, running your program, evaluating your program, or your project, I would say. And then outputs are the things that you produce. So in my case with the study, I'm going to produce a report at the end. If you're doing a new project to create maybe a playground in your community, your output will be a new playground for kids in your community. So sometimes when you're doing a big project, funders ask for this type of model, so it's good to know what it is. And then I'm also going to introduce the annual plan. Holly mentioned this in her introduction. And some of you may, and I think Amy, you mentioned this as well, you might be working on an annual plan that captures for you or for your department or for your community what you're going to do over a year. And your annual plan probably fits into a bigger strategic plan, organizational plan, or community direction. And so in this case, the mandate might be the mandate of your organization, or it could be a mandate for your role. Like in your role as a recreation programmer, what are you supposed to do for whom and how? So I'm supposed to deliver programs for everybody from children to elders. Okay, so that would be your mandate. And then your priorities might break down from that. Your priorities might be youth programming. They might be special events. It might be elders and seniors programming or family planning, or as in programming, sorry. So you could break it out that way as well. And if you choose to do an annual plan, you don't have to pick three priorities like are shown on this model. You can pick two, you can pick four, but try not to pick too many because the more you add, the more detail you need to add below that. So then the activities would be things that help you reach those priorities. So for example, a walking program or you know, buying some equipment or something like that. And then I do have listed at the bottom sort of actions, timing, resources. And at the beginning of the call, a lot of you mentioned, you know, how you need to make sure that the timing is right, that you've got the right resources in place and things like that. So I have one more question that I'm going to ask you for those of you who are actually in the chat, just to pop your answer in the chat because it's a pretty short question. And the question for you to pop in the chat is, what type of framework do you think you're most likely to use for planning in your role? Would you use an Indigenous planning framework, an outcomes-based one or logic model, a strategic plan, or an annual plan? Which one makes the most sense to you? So just go ahead. I'm just trying to figure out who might not be in the chat. Casey, are you able to see the chat?
I think I was finally able to connect, so I can see the chat now, yeah.
Okay, so go ahead and pop in there. So Robin's got strategic. Does anyone find that they are going to do the same sort of thing as Robin, as the strategic, a 3-5 and longer year plan? Add them both, strategic and annual. That's right. So an annual plan might break down your strategic plan into smaller, manageable plans for the year. Holly, you already shared an annual plan, so I'm guessing that probably is what you're most likely to use. Josh and Caden, how about yourselves? And Myla, yes, you can pick more than one. You can also work Indigenous planning into your annual plan, especially if you're working with your Indigenous community to understand what their priorities are, what their traditions are. Even things like planning for the seasons, I think, are really important. So Josh, maybe more of an outcomes-based one, a logic model where you've got very specific program area that you're working in and you need to break that apart. April, yeah, you're probably in that bigger picture where you're looking at bigger plans, similar to Holly perhaps. Anybody else? Outcomes-based planning for Misha, yeah, more project-based, I think, and a strategic plan for depending on your role that you're in. Caden, would you agree with Josh? Would you say the same thing? Josh has said, like, sort of that outcomes or logic model. Oh, Misha's going to use a number of different types. There you go. That's great. And there's not a right or a wrong answer. I just wanted you to keep in mind, that's great, thanks, Caden, and also that Indigenous approach, especially for sport and recreation. I think that's really, really important. And remind me at the end, I do have an opportunity for anybody who's working with Indigenous communities around sport, so I need to share that with you. So I like you to keep in mind there are many different ways to approach planning and present your plan, and we've only touched on a few of them. And what I might have presented might not work for you, so find a way that does work for you in your role and what you do. Remember that planning is something that you do every day at home, at work, and that we also have done in other Rec North learning events, too. So this wraps up our conference call for RP 101. And what I'd like you to do is, for your required learning activity this week, is to prepare. Now, this might sound, what's the word, an oxymoron, contradictory, a simple long-term plan. So, in other words, I'm not looking for pages. Ideally, your plan fits on one piece of paper or in one recorded message or one PowerPoint slide or something like that, whatever you want. You might want to look at Canva as another way to present plans. But I want you to prepare a long-term one. So it can be a long-term one for a program area that you work on, for a project that you want to carry out that's a big project going for, you know, 6 months to a year or longer. It can be a strategic plan, like Robin, you mentioned, for Marsh Lake. Holly shared an annual plan. So just I'd like you to step out of that I'm delivering a program and I'm planning for a program to I'm going to look at the bigger picture plan. If you're not quite sure if you're on the right track, send me a message, send me an example, send me an email with what you're thinking, and I'll give you some feedback on it before you get into it in too much. What you're going to find is it might take you a little longer than Sunday to do this required learning activity, and that's totally okay if that's the case. If you need longer than the 2 weeks, I have to check my calendar what 2 weeks from Sunday is. I think it's like April, let's see, we got it. It's due on Sunday the 24th, but you actually have up until Sunday, April 7th to share it with me. So if you need longer than April 7th, please do let me know. And then what was our next conference call? We don't have one next week. So there's no conference call next week, but there will be one on April 11th for our next learning event. So I think I've touched on most of the information. If you want to stay on the call and ask me any questions about the required learning activity, by all means, please do. And before I forget, I just would like to share an opportunity that came across my desk. Caden and Josh, do you guys know Daria, who used to be the executive director of Manitoba Recreation Association? Okay, so this came from her, and I'll just share what's happening here. So Daria, who was a past former Rec Manitoba executive director, and somebody called Modia Chand, I think is how you might say her name, they're working on anti-racism in sport campaign, and they got funding from Canadian Heritage to prepare a documentary, like a full-length video, on anti-racism in sport. And the 45-minute length documentary is going to feature First Nations, Métis Nation, Inuit, Black, racialized, and religious minority participants in sport. So whether that's athletes, coaches, officials, parents, or decision makers, and they're looking for people who might be interested in sharing their successes in sport, their experiences, things like that. They're trying to find, well, the email came to me looking for one or two participants in the Yukon, but they're doing it across the country. So depending on where you're at, I'm pretty sure they're looking for people. So if you guys would like me to pass on your contact information, if you have anybody in mind, maybe I'll just pop the whole email in here. Just let me know and I'll pass on your contact information to them. So that's a pretty long message in the chat, but that's there. So if you can think of anything that might contribute to it, because it's really great to feature the work that you're doing in your communities, but this is a bit more specific to sports, so that's why I just thought I'd put it out there. Great, so thank you so much. Masicho, merci, Guanashish, maybe pop in the chat how you say thank you in your language. I think last week Kaylee put in Ekosi, which I looked up, and that's thank you, right, in Métis. Is that correct, Kaylee? Or in Cree? Okay, yeah, it's neat. You can look it up, and there's lots of different ways, so thank you. So thanks a lot. I won't talk to you on next Thursday, but I will talk to you on Thursday the 11th, which is probably means you have two Thursdays break. Is that right? Yeah. So you have two Thursdays with no conference calls, which gives you lots of time to complete this required learning activity. So thank you so much. Have a great, happy Easter for those of you who celebrate Easter. And stay on the call if you have any questions. Otherwise, enjoy sunshine if it's sunny where you are today.
Thank you. Have a good day.